Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, January 12, 2025. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. The share ID numbers for Friday, January 10th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,070, that's 22070. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,071, that's 22071. This morning, A Vision for You presents Practicing These Principles in All Our Affairs. The 12th step states, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The 12th step sums up our 12 step recovery program as a lifetime undertaking based on the practice of spiritual principles and service to others. The transforming power of the 12 steps is now focused on the whole of life, in which we are dedicated to a way of life that involves the practice of spiritual principles in all our affairs. These principles are the principles and ideals embodied in the 12 steps. Having learned to practice them in our initial implementation of the step process, we face the big question that Bill Wilson posed. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment of it we discover when we try to help other alcoholics, compulsive overeaters, achieve sobriety? Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work? The challenge we meet in the 12th step is to transfer our practice of the program's great principles into the whole of life. It is our call to honesty with self and others, to humility, to prayer and meditation, to self-examination with step 10, and to service. It means seeking to know the will of our higher power, acknowledging our character defects, admitting our mistakes, and making amends for them, taking responsibility for that which we can change in life, and accepting the things we cannot change. Practicing these principles in the final analysis is living life on life's terms. It is embracing reality. It is a life characterized by remarkable transformation. From our days as childish, emotionally sensitive, and grandiose people, states the AA 12 and 12, we emerge as mature men and women with lives that are useful and profoundly happy. Joining us today to speak on this very topic is Allison L., a recovered compulsive overeater from South Carolina. Allison is dedicated to living the 12-step way of life, and she's here to share her experience, strength, and hope with all of us this morning. It is with great appreciation and a pleasure to welcome Allison L. to the line. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning, Leah, and thank you for that introduction this morning. I am grateful for an opportunity to be here and to have experience, strength, and hope to share today. So I will start with a prayer to ground myself and hopefully open us all to whatever will come today. So God, please use my voice for your words. Open all our hearts and minds here today and for anyone who may listen in the future for connection with you and with each other so that we may know, feel, and remember that we are never alone and there is always hope. Thank you, God. Amen. I will qualify. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in South Carolina. My name's Allison L. I've been living free from suffering from my disease of compulsive overeating for 8 years. I've been entirely abstinent and free of the mental obsession with my food, with my weight, with eating, and with most other things as well. Day by day, I've been using the design for living outlined in the big book for these 8 years. I've not suffered from compulsive overeating for these 8 years, which, you know, I'm taught in the big book, it's contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition day by day. And I will say that I believe, and my experience shows, it's easier to maintain recovery and spiritual wellness than it is to not practice the principles every day and to either relapse or get into an emotional spiritual funk and have to, you know, come back from that. So my dedication, as Leah said, I am dedicated to trying to practice these principles in all my affairs every day, which I cannot do alone. I use the tools of the program to help me practice the principles, which I learn in the big book. So I will say, physically, this illness has affected me. You know, I'm 5'6". My top weight was somewhere over 200, probably in the 220s, maybe more. I'm not quite sure. I'm at least 70 pounds down from that, maintaining it for these 8 years. All my life, my weight went up and down. I was always dieting since I was, gosh, as far as I could remember, always aware of my weight and my size. I used bulimia. I used exercise bulimia. I've had tons of dental work, constant cavities, root canals. I have an implant. We'll probably need more of those in my lifetime. And now, being in recovery and practicing the principles to take care of myself, I take excellent care of my teeth, and I'm abstinent, so that helps. And now I go to the dentist and just upkeep that prior work as a consequence of, you know, how I lived my life before. But I don't have new issues that arise. I haven't had cavities. New ones come up. It's just maintaining now the work that has previously been done. Mentally, I used to constantly think about food. It got progressively worse and worse over the years. I came to OA the first time because, you know, the traditional diets that I used to use just were not working. It had progressed to the point where I could no longer control my food even for a day. So that led me to admitting that I am powerless, and that my life was and continues to be unmanageable without a higher power. Emotionally, there were times when I would feel, quote, better, but it never lasted long because I wasn't entirely abstinent. I wasn't being entirely honest. So I was in a place before program where I would act on whatever emotion or mood would arise. That was my reality. And today, practicing the principles means I can pause, and I know that moods, emotions, circumstances, they're always changing, and I don't have to act upon the moment that I'm in. My relationships were not healthy before program. I tried controlling and manipulating or guilting others into doing or being what I thought they should be so that their life, my life, you know, would be better, to try to settle any discomforts that I felt or that I thought they were feeling, which doesn't work. So, you know, I've been in recovery for 8 years. 3 years before that is when I came to OA, and I spent those first 3 years, you know, playing around with steps and abstinence and not fully being honest. And so what happened was, I didn't want to just suffer a little bit less. I heard people on this line that were no longer suffering from the same things that I was experiencing. And they had experience that I believed was as severe, if not worse, than some of the things I felt, but they were different. I could hear it in their voice. I could hear it in their life. And they continue to show up year after year. I could hear the same people on the line, and they were, you know, becoming more and more sane and more aware of how to live a life that was happy and useful and not focused on food and weight like mine was. And so after those first 3 years in OA, I decided that I would become entirely abstinent, you know, which means, as it says in the doctor's opinion, I had to abstain entirely from the foods, ingredients, and, you know, for me being a compulsive overeater, that meant behaviors as well that were triggering that abnormal reaction in me to drive me back again and again. And that also meant that without having those things and without triggering that, my obsessive thinking would kick in and tell me I needed to go back, and it would be so intense pushing me back towards those things that I had to have a solution for that mental obsession, which is the step work. So I got a sponsor and I dove into the step work. And I will say that, you know, I was thinking about this morning. When I brushed my teeth this morning, I had no, you know, notion that I would brush my teeth this morning so good that I would never have to brush them again. And yet I wanted to work the steps so perfectly that first time that I would be set for life. And it just does not work that way. I have to practice what I learned in the steps and keep building upon that spiritual fitness every day, because life keeps happening. The same way my teeth continue to need brushed, my life continues to need spiritual work done so I can live. The topic today comes from the 12th step. As Leah said, we've had this spiritual awakening. It's the result of the steps from the AA Big Book. And then we try to carry that message to others who suffer as we did, and to practice the principles we learned in all our affairs. So I'm going to take a lot of my quotes today from the Big Book chapter, the wisdom from the chapter working with others, as it applies to practicing the principles in my affairs. There's great guidance in there that says, you know, when we're helping someone else, we show them this. Well, that means I have to be practicing it to show it to whoever I may be helping. And the principles I'm talking about are explained in the steps of the program. There are lists readily available. You can use Google and it'll pull up all the spiritual virtues associated with each of the 12 steps. Sometimes I hear these referred to as honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, love, discipline, patience, perseverance, awareness, service, something close to, you know, those things. And knowing what they are, understanding them, being able to talk about them, studying them, and practicing them in my day-to-day life, those are all very different things. Actually, practicing them requires awareness, willingness, and action to practice them. No matter how well I know them, without awareness of my own life and being and the willingness and the action, it doesn't much matter what I know. That's been my experience. So today, it's definitely not an essay to show how much research or knowledge I have on the technicalities of the principles. What my higher power is inspiring me to do is share how I actually practice them in my day-to-day life. Page 93 of the Big Book says, the main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles, talking about the man you're working with. I have to do that for myself as well. So I'll give an example, one example. I've got three examples here. Might get to all of them, might cut it short, not sure. But we'll see how it goes. So one example that's very common, there's a person in my life that was rubbing me the wrong way. Imagine that. I was irritated by this person. I had to continually work with this person and engage with this person. It wasn't somebody I could avoid. When that's an option, that's what I do. But it wasn't an option with this person. And page 98 tells me, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. So typically my problem is I want somebody else to be different, which puts them in a position of power they do not have, or puts me in a position of power trying to make them change or thinking I know how they should change. Everything can be okay. And that's not trusting in God for me. So I keep my house clean and put my trust back on God. This person that I specifically talking about, I was working very part-time for a couple of years, like 5 to 10 hours a week. And I was doing administrative work and this person was on the board that I had to work with. I did, you know, multiple step 10s that on things that would come up. And so none of my work changed the other person. And when I say, you know, I did multiple step 10s, I did, you know, all that helped me get to the truth, which is looking through the principles of the program. I'm powerless over this person, situation. I have no power to change this person. I have no power to change how I feel about this person, other than to trust and know that I have a higher power who can restore me to sanity, that I can turn my life and will over to this higher power, which means turning my thoughts and actions over to this higher power, which means not believing all the thoughts and feelings I have about this person or situation to be true. Am I willing to believe that maybe I don't know everything? Maybe my judgments and opinions or thoughts and feelings about this person are not correct or are not, they don't have to affect me. I would look at where I was resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid, what was going on for me. And I would say the sick man's prayer for this person. And a lot of times for me, the sick man's prayer is, you know, remembering this person is spiritually developing the same way that I'm still spiritually developing. There were many times I acted the same as this person or had thoughts that were similar to things this person would say at different points in my spiritual development. And so that helped me to have a bit of compassion and to soften for this person. One particular situation that was humbling was we set up a Christmas tree in the building where we worked, and it was a volunteer type situation. So I took my family and we set up a Christmas tree, and then she came in, this other person, and said, "Nope, Christmas tree's got to go in another place." And oh man, I was really upset about that. Selfishly, I was only considering how I wanted to feel. I wanted someone to come in and say, "Wow, look what you did. Good job." I wanted that human validation. I was only considering my wants and needs. I didn't care where the tree was supposed to go. I put it where I thought it should go. And so my dishonesty in that, I took it very personally. Like, her comment about where the tree needed to go or where anybody thought the tree needed to go was a personal attack against me. And it came down to my fear that comes up again and again, is that I'm not good enough. It feels like I need other people to tell me I'm good enough. And 10 people can tell me I'm good enough, and the one that tells me I'm not, that's the one I hone in on, and that's when I get upset. So I looked at all those things. I shared them with another fellow. I prayed for God, my higher power, to remove that fear from me. And when I have that fear, it's because I'm trusting and relying on this person to be something they cannot possibly be, to give me validation or give me something they cannot possibly give me. It only comes from my higher power and the capital T truth that I know to be true, which is I am enough. I am enough, and this situation is not an indication of that. So I shared that with another person. And as I prayed and as I got spiritual feedback, what God would have me be is to be honest and humble, to be direct rather than passive aggressive, which is a trait of mine. In this particular situation, I typically try not to cause any harm, but in this particular situation, I did grumble to another person and I grumbled to my husband about the whole thing. And so after, you know, sharing with another fellow who understood the work that I'm doing and that I'm getting my trust and reliance back onto a higher power rather than a human power, and it came up, I owed an apology because the grumbling got back to the person that I could have just talked to honestly and said, you know, why does the tree need to move? You know, can I help with moving the tree, rather than acceptance? So I had to apologize, and it was very humbling. I admitted that I was upset, and I admitted to her my upset was completely about me. And because of the type of relationship and work that I did with this person, I was able to, you know, explain a bit further and say that, you know, this came from my internal insecurity. It came from my own fear that I'm not good enough. It had nothing to do with you. I apologize that my mood, you know, made it seem like it was about you when it was not. And that was cleaning. That was my house cleaning. I was cleaning up, you know, any damage I may have done through being honest, through making that amends to her. And then I continued as time went on to not engage in that behavior. When I knew I would be in touch with this person, I would pray before I got in touch with this person to be spiritually fit and remember, doesn't matter what happens with this person, my validation is already within me from my higher power. After that, I continued to be of service to others. I didn't continue to think about that situation, how it could have been different. I didn't continue to beat myself up about the way I handled it because I had cleaned it up. And my higher power doesn't, you know, need me to keep thinking about it or lamenting about it, either what happened or my part in how it happened or what I did afterwards, because it was done. I could move on. And then each time something would come up with this particular person, I would continue to maybe have some resentment or fear, but over time it decreased in frequency, intensity, and duration. That was the spiritual progress. And that's what we look for. And so that was how I practiced the principles in that one small aspect of my life with one particular person in one particular role of my life. The next example I'll share of practicing the principles is a bit bigger situation in my life that's been recent. I stayed home with my kids I have three kids, and I stayed home with them for 14 years. My husband worked and supported us, and they're all in school now, and we're, you know, in a place where they're doing well in school. They're safe and stable, and, you know, my role as stay-at-home parent is still very crucial, but it's not so much about my time being at home all day, because now they're in school besides summer, and they're, you know, 14, 12, and 8. So even in the summer, we're at a point now, a new stage of life where, you know, they can be home alone for some periods of time, that they all have devices they can, you know, call from, and they can, you know, cook for themselves and take care of themselves. And so, you know, when I began staying home with them 14 years ago, my husband and I agreed that we would do that, and it was never agreed upon that I would stay home forever. You know, it was at some point I would, you know, get a job that contributed financially. And so I worked part-time, as I said, for a couple of years, but it was 5 hours a week, maybe 10. It was not financially contributing to the family in a way that was what we needed any longer. And when this began to come up and my husband began to say, you know, it might be time that we look into you getting a job, I was okay thinking, yeah, of course. But over my time staying home, I had come into recovery. I had done some, you know, trainings and got some certifications and some lines of helping others that I thought that would be what I would do. And I thought for sure that was what God, my higher power, was directing me to do, wanted me to do, and would have me do. The thing is, it wasn't contributing financially to my family. It wasn't growing in the way that I thought it would. And, you know, I had a vision of what my life was going to look like and how it was going to go. And I was pretty dead set on feeling like that was what it was going to be. And yet I was hearing my husband. I had some resentment towards him, and I did the step work through that. Same way I walked through with the other person with the more minor irritation, this huge, you know, relationship and life-altering decision, I did the exact same work. I was powerless over how he felt about it. I was powerless over the reality of our finances and raising three kids and the house we live in and the economy we live in. I'm powerless over all of those things. And I believed my higher power would restore me to sanity, and I was willing and remain willing to go to any lengths for recovery, for sanity, and to live in line with my higher power's will, because it's always better than what I would plan. And so I turned my life and my will over day by day, meaning my thoughts and my actions. So a prayer that I have when there's a decision to be made or something's happening is, let it be this or something better. And I had an idea what I wanted it to be, and I had been praying for a while, this or something better. Bless this or block this. And when what I'm wanting is continuously not coming to fruition in the way that, you know, I'm thinking it will or should, then, you know, I trust my higher power has a better plan. And so I turn my thoughts and actions towards whatever that might be and do the next indicated action, which, you know, I started looking for other work opportunities. I did not want to, let me say very clearly, I did not want to think about working a typical office job. I didn't want that. I have experience in that. I have a business degree. I can do that. Did not want to do that. Thought I knew what was best, and was pretty sure my higher power was telling me that was what was best, but I remained willing and open. That's practicing the principles for me, is trusting my higher power regardless of what it feels like or looks like. And to look at what were the resentments and fears coming up in this process of the reality changing, that I was not going to be able, and what I was thinking I would do for, quote, work, was not happening. So slowly over time, over process of, you know, weeks, I would say, I began to look for outside work. I thought, I'll apply. And I mean, there was heavy resistance and resentments coming up through that I would continue to look at what was under the resentment as far as my fear, and continue to be honest with my husband that my reactions were not about him, that I identified that I was having to adjust internally to where God was guiding me, because it wasn't what I had imagined. So, you know, there came days where I would be in a very bad mood, and I did my best not to take that out on my husband, my family, and to be honest about what that was, and to own that I'm just having feelings about this. And I applied for some jobs, and then there came a point where there was a shift in my perception where I thought, okay, I'm willing to work outside my home. And I applied for a job at my kids' school, and I thought for sure my higher power would place me there, because that seemed like the safest option. I would still be with my kids. I had subbed at the school. I was very comfortable there. I applied for a teaching position that I am not qualified for at all. I don't have a teaching degree. This was an art teacher position. I have no background in art, but I thought for sure that is where I was going to land. But I was still praying that it would be this or something better. I was still willing, and talking to my fellows, talking to my husband, talking to my sponsor about what was happening within me and outside of me, the circumstances, day by day. And I continued to sponsor. I continued to take calls and listen and hear about others. It was not thinking about me all the time and what was going on with me. It was step 11 and step 12 and 10th steps day by day. And I continued to follow up on that job with the school and thinking that was it, that was it. Praying, bless it or block it. Let it be this or something better. Make it obvious, God. Show me. And, you know, part of my applying for jobs was there were some people that I knew in this area, and I just said, I'm looking for a job if you know of anything. And it's so interesting. It was like there was this shift in me at the same time, I received a call that said, hey, I know of something. Will you come in and just meet with us and see if maybe this is a job you could do? And it was, okay, well, the next indicated action for me was to say, okay, I'll come and talk to you. I can do that. And so I sat and I prayed and I got myself right aligned with, I want to do God's will. I'm willing to accept. I may not know what that is, but I trust that I will know what I need to know when I need to know it. And I went on that prospective interview. And within that day, they offered me a job. And I was terrified because it was becoming so real that I would be working outside the home, that I would not be, I mean, my whole life was going to shift and change. The whole focus of my days and my life was going to change if I were to do this. And I sat and I prayed and I asked for the fear to be removed and that I would trust and rely on my higher power. And I got this clear message, a thought in my head is what it was. And it was that my higher power, that she would be with me no matter where I was. And even if it looked different than I had thought, that didn't mean I would be alone. So I could do it. Even though I was scared of the unknown, that I would, my higher power would be with me. And through my step work and looking at fears and getting spiritual considerations and through my own prayers, something that I trust about my higher power is there's not going to be some condemnation or some punishment if I choose wrong. So it wasn't a matter of, I better get this decision right or else. I didn't have that pressure, which at one point in time, I did feel that. And so that's progressed through practicing these principles. I don't feel that anymore. I knew that if this, you know, wasn't where I was supposed to be, then something would shift and I wouldn't be there. That if it was the right thing, that I would grow into that. And so, you know, I talked to my husband, I talked to my fellows and took time before I gave an answer because on the phone call, I wanted to please this person offering me this job and be like, yes, I will accept, you know, without thinking it through, without talking to my husband, because I wanted them to think I was capable. But that would have been answering from the wrong, it might not have been the wrong answer, but it would have been coming from the wrong motivations and intentions within me. So I asked for time and I took a pause to so that I could talk to my husband. And the first thing I did was start sobbing because I was so scared to do this. But how I felt in that moment didn't mean that's what I had to act from. Didn't need to act from the fear of the unknown, the fear of change. And that was a shift that my higher power did within me that I couldn't have done myself because I was very adamant that this is exactly what I was not going to do. And so I had a vision of my life and I was willing to just keep building my life day by day using the principles of the program, using the tools of the program, and accept that I actually don't know what the blueprint of my life looks like in the end. I may have an idea, but something that's been proven to me time and time again is, let me find this quote, page 100 says, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. I believe that about my higher power, that it will always be better than what I could have planned. And that gives me the awareness, the willingness to take the action that goes along with where I believe my higher power is guiding me versus what I would have planned. And that's what I did in this situation. I felt the very intense feelings of grief and sadness. It was visceral and real. For a whole, you know, for like a day, I had flashbacks of what my life had been like as a stay-at-home mom, and I could picture myself in those times, and oh, I longed for them so much. That was part of, you know, the feelings and the grief that I had to experience. It didn't mean that I had to act on them or think this was the wrong decision because it was hard and painful. And never once during any of this did food sound like a good idea. Did I think that I needed a little bit of relief from a little extra food? Or, that just never came up as a thought. I focused on practicing the principles. I focused on being of service to others. I sponsored still every day throughout this, even the days when I didn't want to get out of bed. So I felt the stuff. And they didn't kill me, and they didn't drive me back to the food, and they passed. The feelings, the hard stuff, the grief, it always passes. Nothing stays the same. And I think I used to feel like in the intensity of that emotions or circumstances that it would kill me. And that was what drove me to seek some sort of relief. And I don't need to do that now because relief always comes. And the relief that comes at the end of the wave of, you know, feeling the hard stuff is better and more loving than relief that came when I would harm myself and try to numb myself with food, which didn't work anyways. It just prolonged and put off what I was going to have to feel and experience on anyways. And so... To wrap up that story, I accepted the job. I asked, they wanted me to start 2 days from that point in time. And I, you know, instead of just saying, yes, absolutely, I'll do whatever you want me to do, which was my natural instinct still, was to say, oh, they need me to start in 2 days. I've got to do that. Even though I didn't want this job initially, I wanted to get the validation. But I didn't do that. I talked to my husband and I talked to my sponsor and I sat and I, you know, sat with what was going to really work for first a part-time job that I still had some obligation to help them wrap up, my family needing me to, you know, shift, and, you know, what it would be like for me to shift into this new life. And so I said, you know, I need a week. And I took that week to mourn and grieve and process and help others and to serve others and to serve that job that I was, you know, a part-time job I was leaving, and to help them, you know, look for a replacement and to train that person for success in that role. And I hope that I'm painting the picture that it was not an easy process, but it was a much easier process than fighting it all along. Rather than continuing to say, no, I know what's best, I continued to say this or something better, and to trust that putting myself in the care of my higher power would end up always being better than what I had planned, even when it didn't feel like it, even when I couldn't see it, even when it was unknown. And time after time of doing that, I can build upon that experience and draw back upon that experience. Situation. I've been working now for, I think about 6 weeks, and it's so interesting. I was just talking to my sponsor about this, that every day I do my nightly review as part of my step 11 practice, as it's outlined in the big book. I've been doing this for 8 years. Every day I review my day with my higher power to take a look at everything outlined, was there any resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, or fear I missed throughout the day? Was I thinking of myself all day? Did I think of others? What did I do throughout my day? And I use it as an opportunity, too, to say I did some good things throughout the day. You know, how crappy was I today? That just doesn't work. That's not true. And so I also like to look at what did I not want to do today, but God helped me do anyways. And so for a while, every day, it was, I didn't want to go to work, and God helped me go to work and do a good job and show up still for all my responsibilities. I still sponsor. I still go to my meetings. I still, weigh and measure my food and pack it up and take it to this place. I don't take it out on my kids or my husband that I didn't want to go. I come home and I love my people. And God helped me with that every day. And then this past Friday, I was given the option to stay home from work because of weather. My kids were home, and, you know, so the lady I work with said, you can stay home if you want. And I went into work, and she said, oh, you could have stayed home. And I said, I wanted to come in. And my sponsor said, you went from every day not wanting to go in, and God helped you go in, to now this shift of you actually wanted to go in that day. And it may not be like that every day. But that's the miracle, that practicing the principles day by day, and my higher power shifts my internal landscape, my thoughts, feelings, emotions, moods, which are human and ever waxing and waning, and I ride through them. But the progress over time is just miraculous. Just in that short amount of time, the 6 weeks I've been working there, I've had days where I wanted to go in, or I've enjoyed it when I didn't think that was possible. So that's the most recent area where I've practiced the principles and how it's played out as the Big Book promises, that when I look back, I can realize the things which come to me when I put myself in my higher power's hands are better than anything I could have planned. And how do I put myself in my higher power's hands? By practicing the principles I learned when I went through the steps. Because it was not a one-time thing. It was an everyday, oh, I'm still powerless. I still weigh and measure my food. I still abstain from things that would trigger that allergic reaction that I will always have. I'm still honest about, you know, if there's something in my food plan that needs to shift. I'm still honest about my thoughts and feelings around food when they rise. I still believe that there's a higher power that will restore me to sanity, and that I don't even know what sanity looks like half the time or what it will be, but I'm willing to trust in it that I don't always know. And I'm willing to turn my life and will over that higher power, my thoughts and my actions over that higher power. I'm willing to keep looking at what's going on, my resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, or fear. And, you know, I started out by saying, knowing what the principles are, studying the principles, being able to talk about them, and then actually practicing them are very different things. And so my work is to actually practice them, which requires awareness of myself, what's going on, willingness, honesty and action day by day. And, you know, a lot of days there's nothing exciting going on. And that can be just as hard as when there is big excitement going on. So even when life is dull, mundane, boring, I do the same things that I do on the harder days where there's big decisions. I weigh and measure my food. I pray and meditate. I talk to fellows. I'm of service, you know, inside and outside of program. And that consistency day by day is nothing I could have done on my own. That's where God provides the discipline and consistency for me. So I'm not going to go into my third example. It was, you know, another example of a relationship with some resentment involved, that I did the exact same thing that I did in those other two examples. So I'm gonna close here and just, you know, hope that my experience, strength, and hope opened something up for someone, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Allison, for this beautiful, authentic, and profound presentation. Thank you for sharing your changed perceptions, attitudes, and behavior as you practice the principles in all your affairs. A very helpful presentation this morning indeed. The share ID for today, 22072. That's 22072. Allison's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. We will now transition to a question answer segment, your opportunity to pose questions that you may have. You can do so by pressing star one to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Sonia S. from Pennsylvania.
Katie G. from Boston.
Katie G.
Tamara C.
Tamara.
Sonia S. from Pennsylvania.
Yes, Sonia, got you.
Oh,
first.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Sure. Anyone else? Star one to unmute. Okay, let's get started with Sonia S., please.
Good morning. This is Sonia, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater, and thank you so much for your message. This is so right on for me. My question is, what were your strategies in growing in the area of not needing validation from others, not needing to be liked by everybody? Because I know for me, that is something that I deal with. I want everyone to love me and like me, and that's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. So I was wondering, what do you do? Like, can you talk more about that?
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for that opportunity to say something more about that, because that is ongoing. And it is one of those things that I continue to see progress. I mean, it's not removed. I was just... within the past week at this new job, they offered me, an opportunity to add a whole job responsibility, a whole new role, which showed that they, you know, have seen something in me, that they have trust in me. And I did writing and I did inventory on this because I got validation, and immediately it was not enough. Human validation will just never be enough. So it's that awareness of what's going on for me in the moment, because it was like this nice feeling of they validated me, and immediately went into, how do I get more of this? What can I prove next? What more can I do? And oh my gosh, what if I can't live up to this? The fears set in immediately. That's just my human nature. And so my strategy is to practice the principles and take a look at what's going on, having that awareness, and then sharing it with my fellows, praying and asking God, please remove these fears. And that's my trust and reliance being on human power, recognizing it doesn't work, never will work, will not be enough. Can I accept the validation I'm being given as enough for today? And I don't have to figure out how to earn more of it, because it always comes freely over time. So my strategy is just to do the inventory work, to sit in the discomfort of recognizing that it's there and that there will be progress in it, but I'll likely always enjoy human validation my whole life and want more of it. But I always enjoy my meals and will, you know, be grateful when the next meal comes. That doesn't mean it has to be compulsive or that I have to continue to harm myself or others or act on it. So that's what, you know, recovery helps with. I'll pass.
Thank you, Sonia S., for your question. Katie G., your turn.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, everyone. Katie G., recovered in Boston. So grateful to be here today. Allison, it says a much more important demonstration lies in our homes, occupations, and affairs, and I loved hearing your examples. I was wondering if you could expand. I find practicing the principles in my home to be really challenging as well. And I was wondering if you could expand on anything that you might say to somebody who is struggling with that, or areas of things that you might have studied or whatnot to help sharpen your skills with your humans.
Thanks, Katie G. Yeah, I didn't go into my relationship with my husband or children because, you know, those, I could be a whole talk. Those are the most challenging, definitely, relationships and the most difficult place to practice the principles and to, you know, show that I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of anything, because I live with, three young people and one grown man and two dogs and a cat, and everybody's got needs, everybody's got feelings, everybody's got thoughts, opinions, and waning and waxing moods that, you know, sometimes my mood can direct the whole house. Other times I'm in a good mood and somebody else has got an attitude. And so it is a daily practice of, you know, some detachment from what's going on with them and recognizing if it's my stuff to help with or not. It's through prayer and talking to fellows and my resentments and fears, you know, when my kids are upset or hurt. Oh, do I want to fix it? I want to fix it because it hurts me and it makes me uncomfortable. So it's a process of, but they need to experience their own life. And I need to let them have the dignity of experiencing their life, their feelings, and processing them in their own way. And what's the role God's assigning me? Provide a safe environment that they don't hurt themselves or others. Other than that, they get to feel and express how they want to. And my marital relationship, same kind of thing. Letting him have his stuff, having I can provide space for him to speak openly and honestly to me without fear of my retaliation or reaction because of recovery. And I can share honestly and openly because I go through a process of being spiritually fit before I go to him with that stuff. So that's probably the quickest summary that I would give of that. Thanks, Katie. Pass.
Thank you, Katie G. Tamara C., your turn to pose a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Leah, for your service. And thank you, Allison. I got so much out of your share. I want to ask you about, like, moods changing. And I think I got the message that you were saying, you know, like, we don't have to do anything to control it. And that's my default, is when I become aware that my mood is low, I think I have to fix this. I have to make myself feel better. And so my question is, in your recovery, how do you find yourself responding when you notice your mood has shifted to a low place?
Thank you. That's an excellent question. And I will say I'm in my mid-40s and my mood is very, you know, much being affected by aging and hormone shifting and, you know, all the stuff that comes with being in your mid-40s, at least for me. So my, I think awareness and acceptance of it and reminding myself and others remind me as well, it won't be like this forever, because when I'm out of energy, when my mood is low, my fear is it's going to be this way forever. But my experience shows me that's not true. I have definite highs and lows, and it's accepting and knowing things about myself. So like in the morning, I like the morning. I wake up and I'm full of life and energy and ready to go. But I also know as the day goes on, I lose momentum. I lose, you know, so I don't plan, you know, speaking engagements or, you know, planning really much of anything afternoon or evening, because I know that's not going to work well for me. So it's knowing myself, accepting my limitations, and, you know, talking to outside resources. Of course, my doctor is well aware of my shifting, you know, moods and helps me, you know, with solutions there. And because of recovery, you know, if she suggests that I take a supplement, I can be disciplined about actually taking that particular supplement or medication. Whereas before program, I, you know, couldn't even commit to that. So I think it's
yeah, I think the biggest key for me is remembering it won't be this way forever. The good times pass, the hard times pass. Every mood comes and goes. Every emotion comes and goes. They have a natural course that they run. And I've survived every one of them up until today. So I have to believe I will continue to be able to feel them and survive them and don't have to fix them. There's no fixing. There's asking for help and resources and guidance, but not everything needs to be fixed. Yeah, coming to accept that I don't need to be fixed. There's nothing broken or wrong. I'm just, trying to live my life the best I can, and that's enough. I'll pass.
Thank you, Tamara C. Great opportunity to pose questions this morning to our speaker, Allison L. You can do so by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the last letter, including the first letter of your last name.
Joanne B., Vermont.
Joanne.
Marjorie G., New Mexico.
Melissa C.
K.S. Anyone else? Thus far, I have Joanne B., Marjorie G., Melissa S., K.S., Mary. I didn't catch the first letter of your last name.
Mary R.
Mary R.
I'm not sure if the Melissa, there might. I know there's
yes.
a Melissa S., but there's also Melissa C. I'm not sure which
yes,
one.
Melissa
okay,
C. Gotcha.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
There was someone, yes, Chris G, gotcha. Okay, thank you. Okay, let's start with Joanne B, followed by Marjorie G.
Hi, everybody. This is Joanne B, calling in from Vermont. Thank you so much for your message today. And my question, what struck me today was your story about the woman and a Christmas tree. And how I was just wondering, do you feel like people that trigger you or trigger strong emotions in you, do you regard those as like almost like a teacher in some way? Like maybe God's trying to help you grow in some way by learning how to manage those emotions in people, relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I do. And my fellows and my sponsor remind me, and my sponsor kept saying, oh, this person is just such a great teacher for you. And I, as irritating as that is, it's true. It is. It helps me grow spiritually to see and know things, you know, more about myself so that I can show up for the next situation, because chances are I'm going to run into another person who's going to have a similar personality trait and going to touch me in the same way. And hopefully I will have progressed to not reacting in such a way. So I have to be careful about not feeling like God, you know, tests me or gives me trials or that kind of thing. Cause that just, you know, it doesn't work for me to think in that kind of way. So I see it more as, I'm living my life, and this is the natural course of events and lives, and my higher power is helping me through the normal course and you know of events and lives, more so than placing them there for particular challenges. It's a very minor shift in my mindset, but it helps me trust and rely on my higher power as loving, helpful, supportive versus throwing challenges in to give me, you know, strength. That doesn't work for me. So I would say that's my, yes, definitely teaches me, helps me grow, and my higher power helps me through that as it naturally comes up being human and living life. Yes, I'll pass.
Thank you, Joanne B. Marjorie G., your turn.
Thank you. It's Marjorie G. in New Mexico. Thank you, Allison, Would you be willing to give an illustration of how you practice these principles within the fellowship, say in a business meeting or group conscience meeting, or in regard to doing service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is, I would say it's easier for me to practice within the program because other people are practicing them too. Not that, you know, everyone is spiritually fit or, you know, practicing them the same way that I am or following the big book even. But most people in program are here trying to follow the dictates of a higher power, and there's guides and outlines for business meetings and group conscience and interactions with fellows. And so my way of practicing the principles is following the same step work. If there's a situation where I feel bothered, I take a look at that for myself. And if I've done harm, I would go to that person and apologize or amend my behavior or reactions. You know, even within program and doing service, it's remembering also that I still don't have power. For myself, I'm powerless, and I'm also powerless over the people that I offer service and help to. So nobody can fix me, change me, you know, and I can't fix or change anyone else. So I think one of the things I've has been hard is working with fellows or sponsees who continue to suffer, and that can be painful for me. So I have to look at, you know, when I get fearful that I'm not doing enough, and remembering that I don't have the power to do enough to help or fix anyone. I couldn't even do it for myself, and that it's a higher power, and I'm just here to play the role that my higher power assigns me for this particular day. And I'm just, you know, to be the a tiny part of anyone's story or journey is enough. And I have to remind myself of that because I don't always feel that, but reminding myself that it's enough just to show up to the business meeting and maybe give my input if I feel directed to. It's enough to show up as a sponsor and remind that person that they have a power that loves them and is guiding them and will restore them to sanity. It's enough. So I'll pass.
Thank you. G. Next up, Melissa C.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much, Melissa C., recovered in New York. And thank you, Allison. Beautiful presentation with really good examples. And I was thinking specifically about your workplace one where you're entering this new job. And I've, for myself, like, I can be anxious about entering, like, a new place, new people. Now I'm going to have to, like, somehow explain my food situation often. But that if I go with the intention of finding someone I'm supposed to help there has helped. And I'm wondering, have you had that experience in this new workplace? Is there anybody there you feel compelled to carry the message to? And if so, how do you do that in this new work environment? Thanks.
Yeah, of course that has come up. So thank you, Melissa, for the question and opportunity to say something about that. And in the big book, you know, even in this chapter I've been talking about working with others, it says on page 102, why sit with a long face in places where there's drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure. If it's a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. And I've had in the past where I would show up thinking perhaps there's someone I'm meant to help. Maybe they're a compulsive overeater, so by sharing my story, but that can, I can get very focused on that. And so I try to just remember that showing up as myself, sharing as much as I feel directed to share, being open and vulnerable to a level that's appropriate for the environment,
that will, God will work through that. And so I just try not to get laser focused on someone who might be overweight and think maybe I'm here to help this person because I've done that in the past. And so I just more in general try to show up as who I am today, honestly, and not change who I am because I'm in this environment, to be confident and own what I do and what I know. Nobody else has to understand why I do what I do, or, you know, my compulsive overeating or my program, except for me. I'm the only one that has to believe it's true, to know it, and to live it. So I'm, you know, having some years of doing this and meeting new people and being in new environments, has gotten more comfortable now. It's still, you know, a little bit, there's some nerves involved, you know, because it's going to come up and, you know, I'm like, what if they ask me to go out to lunch? I don't really like going out to lunch, you know? So, I just show up, I pack my lunch, and when questions arise, I'm just honest. I prefer to do it one-on-one versus like a group of people. So I, you know, have different answers for different scenarios, but when I'm one-on-one, I will typically say, you know, I have a lot of, you know, allergies and medical conditions. And then, you know, if it's someone I start to feel more comfortable with, I typically say I've had an eating disorder. I follow a 12-step program. I eat a plan from a nutritionist. I eat very specifically. You know, it's what I have to do for myself. And, you know, when people, food's very personal to people. So there are times when I've had this at this new job where people said, oh, so you're telling me if I don't eat sugar and flour, then I won't be so fat. And, you know, those kinds of comments where I can tell that what I do, just being here and doing what I do, threatens or, you know, brings that up for people. And I just remain very calm and sympathetic and compassionate inside. And I just say, oh, this is just what I do, you know, and what works for me and what I need to do for my, to be sane. So I just try to be honest, authentic, and vulnerable, which, you know, allows other people space if they want to do the same. Yeah, I hope that answers it. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa C. Next up, KS, followed by Mary R.
Good morning. This is KS, recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. Thank you, Allison, for your beautiful share. So two questions related. First is, I'm sure it's been an adjustment with your schedule and your sort of life rhythm with your new job situation. So I'm just wondering how that has affected your Step 11 practice, either in the morning or throughout the day, and how you've adjusted to that. And then two, what does that look like? Could you describe what your daily spiritual practice of Step 11 looks like? Thanks so much.
Yeah. As you're asking that, I was thinking it really hasn't shifted that much, honestly. I still get up and start my morning with my first thought is, thank you, God, I woke up another day. Thank you, I woke up and I'm abstinent again today. And then I, you know, I walk through the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and then the morning prayer guidance from, you know, the big book, that, you know, as I think about the day ahead, I ask my thinking be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. I'll think a little bit about the day ahead. I pray that God, you know, would ask, help me to make decisions. And then as I'm getting ready in the morning, for me, it's about awareness of my higher power as often as I possibly can. And remembering my higher power as often as I possibly can is the source and the guide for my life. Whether I was home or whether I'm now at work, that's my practice ongoing, is, you know, remembering that. And so that hasn't really changed. It's just in a different scenario. I have an alarm on my phone right now that at a certain time reminds me to pray for someone I had a resentment for over the holidays. So I'm still praying for her every day. So I have that set on there. And, in the mornings at my work, it can sometimes be a bit quiet before my coworker gets into the office that we share. And so I will sometimes do a meditation before she gets there. Sometimes not, but I try to pause, say the serenity prayer, at random times throughout the day. I do my sponsor call and I talk to a sponsee every morning before I start my work day, which I didn't even have to shift those times. They still worked. And I talk to fellows. I talk to usually three fellows a day. And make sure I'm of service and sharing what's going on for me. And I just don't make those calls during my workday. That's the only difference, is the times I might make those calls has shifted. But every night then I do my nightly review. I read something from program literature and I write a little bit about it, maybe a page in my journal that I'll read to my sponsor the next day. And, pray that God would help me review the day, take a look at my day honestly. And yeah, so it really hasn't shifted that much. It's that awareness and ongoing conscious contact. And that really is just my intention and practice. So yeah, it really hasn't. My schedule and life rhythm have changed, but it hasn't changed that part of it for me. So I'll pass.
Thank you, KS, for your question. Mary R., your turn.
Oh, God, morning. Wow. I think I'm going to listen to this about 10 times. Every question that I could have possibly wanted to ask has been answered except for one. Could you share a little bit more about your authentic self? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. My authentic self is growing and developing every day. And I think for me, showing up as my authentic self, I have to remember that it's okay if that shifts. I think I used to be afraid of being who I thought my authentic self was because what if tomorrow I change my mind or want something different? And I have to recognize that's okay. It's showing up as my authentic self, doing the best I can today in who that is. And if it changes or shifts, that's okay too. Not that it's fluctuating a lot. The main principles that I live by or who I think my authentic self is, remains the same. But it's getting to know myself, recognizing for me that the longest relationship I'm ever going to have is going to be with myself and my higher power. And so I want my higher power to shed away the things I used to believe that were not working, that were taught to me by people that wanted something from me, shedding those away and living by, what is true as far as, how I want to show up in the world, directed and guided by my higher power that is love and for the greatest and highest good of myself and all those around me, but not at the expense of myself. Because I'm not that powerful, again, to alter myself in such a way that it would make the world better. I can show up as myself, and that is enough for the world to be as it's meant to be. And I'll help who I'm supposed to help. I think that's what I'll say about showing up as my authentic self today. Thanks, Mary. Pass.
Thank you, Mary. We are. Chris G., your turn. And then we'll have time for a couple more questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Allison. I have heard a lot about bringing decision-making and just bringing God in. I my original question was about spirituality, but you've answered that. So can you share a prayer? Well, you've answered that too. So can you share a reading that you use, or a reading you use with your sponsors?
I mean, a reading that I use or share. I mean, anything from the Big Book as it comes to mind or applies to. I would say one that I refer to often is one that I use today, reminding myself that the things that come to me when I place myself in God's hands will be better than anything that that I could come up with. I'll remind myself and I'll remind my fellows of that. And a particular reading, I mean, reading the daily instructions for steps 10 and 11, I think are such a great summary of all the principles kind of tied up in there. So pages 84, 85, 86, 87, all the way to 88, reading those would always be my go-to for myself or others. Not that I read those with someone every day, but those would be my go-to pages for reminders for how to practice the principles today. A refresher. I'll pass.
Thank you, Chris G. We have time for a few more questions. Star one. Got you.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Natalie S.
Natalie S.
Jordan L.
KP.
Jordan L. and KP. Okay. That should take care of the time. Beginning with Hannah Yetta R. Questions only, please.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Allison, for your great, wonderful presentation. Very heartfelt. I'm sorry about the noise in the background. I'm in a noisy place. But you had mentioned, somebody had asked before about people who upset you are there to help you grow. I wonder, know also on that same note, are there people who remind you of people in your past, and that's what triggers you? And if so, can you give me some kind of an example of that and what you do?
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Thank you for that. I've had issues come up where, you know, my husband will do things or say things that will remind me of my dad growing up, and, you know, specific hurtful things that would happen or that would bother me about growing up, you know, with my dad. And not that my husband would do hurtful things, but he would just say or do something. I mean, it can be as simple as a bodily function, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, my dad used to do that. And that would be enough. And so what I do about that is the same exact things, to take a look at, you know, well, first of all, what's the truth about this? It's a normal bodily function. My higher power can restore me to sanity even here and, you know, bring me back to sanity, reality, truth, this moment. This man is not my father. This man is not, you know, doing those things that hurt me. If there's fear that comes up along with that, sharing it, praying for it to be removed, trust and reliance back on a higher power. It's the same principles, the same process, really, for anything. And recognizing that, yeah, these things may continue to happen, but there's spiritual progress. So things that used to really bother me, you know, in that way, bother me less and less and less over time. Some I don't even notice as much anymore. So it's God will, my higher power continues to provide me more peace and serenity in my life as I go along. So I'll pass.
Thank you, Hanayeta R. Natalie F., your turn.
Thank you so much, both of you, for your service and your share today. My question to you has to do with perhaps earlier in your program. I've been in the program and have been recovered for a while, but just 2 years. And I'm wondering if early in your program you could describe a situation where you had a challenge, like a health challenge, a persistent problem, or a difficulty in a loved one or one of your children, where it really stretched your faith and trust in your higher power. And I'm wondering how you kept hope and in program, and if you had any thoughts, advice, experience with that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Natalie R. Yeah, I've definitely had my faith and trust tested in recovery. I've done shares on this before where, you know, it came to be known that my children have learning differences and the school they were in was not recognizing those, not helping them, basically making my oldest son very depressed and feel like he was stupid and unwilling to, you know, work with us on the truth of the matter, which is he just needs to learn in a different way. And so, you know, the questions that would come up for me that I feel are very natural and human are, why is this happening? Like, really? Why? How can something painful like this happen to, you know, a young child? And, you know, my father-in-law died while I've been in program, and it was a very sudden, unexpected, you know, painful situation to watch him pass away in the way he did, and I did it in recovery. And, you know, same kind of thing, you know, watching, you know, my husband, his sister, and his mom go through that from a place where they didn't have recovery, but they had faith, you know, it made me take a look at, it stretched, as I like that word, as you said, it stretched my faith and my trust in a higher power. But I can always draw upon prior experience. If my higher power saved me from the hell of compulsive overeating, and I no longer have those obsessive thoughts anymore, then I have to believe that higher power is good and loving. And there are things I don't understand, and I can be okay with that. It's just a matter of always trusting and having faith that my higher power is good and loving and guiding towards the greatest and highest good that I don't understand. It's a blueprint, a design I don't get to see, and I don't have to understand to be okay in this moment, in this day. And then it's coming back to right here in this moment, because going through those very hard, challenging times, they don't last forever. And I survived them, and, you know, I showed up for them, and I didn't compulsively eat over them. So that alone gives me faith and trust that my higher power is going to keep showing up. I have no reason to doubt that for today. So I'll pass.
Thank you, Natalie S. Jordan L., your turn.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Leah, for moderating, and thank you, Allison, for sharing with us in such a open way. I think it's very brave when people are willing to share a little bit more specifically about their own lives, and I find it very helpful, so I appreciate that. This is going to sound like a funny question, but I got to believe that the God of my understanding would have us maybe have a little bit of fun every once in a while, and find enjoyment in our lives. So if you, and I think that's probably important because I think that we may have abused food in the past in that way, and now we may have to find a healthier way of doing that. So if you would talk about how you have fun and find enjoyment in life. Thanks.
Well, that's an excellent question. Thank you. I tend to be a very serious person. And so this is a question that's probably a great reminder for me that there is a lot of fun and joy and enjoyment in life. And yeah, absolutely. Isn't that, you know, part of the point of recovery is so that I can enjoy things. And so I enjoy, you know, my kids and how funny they are. And they're at the ages now where we can have different kind of relationship where we joke with each other and, you know, we play games and we get competitive or not. And they teach me things and I enjoy, you know, we watch movies together. We watched a movie together last night and, you know, a couple of us cried together and during the movie. I enjoy watching shows. I enjoy talking to my friends about those shows, you know, nothing serious, but completely, you know, a friend of mine called it brain candy. It's just something to like, I don't have to think about serious things right now. I can just watch a little bit of entertainment. And, you know, I enjoy my pets, you know, two dogs and a cat that follow me around and love me. And I enjoy them so much. And I enjoy spiritual things and metaphysical things and meditation can be fun and singing bowls and going to events that, you know, have those types of sound healing. And I do those things for fun. And I like talking to my friends and doing FaceTime calls and being goofy and silly and sending funny, you know, photos and laughing at the things that are laughable in life because they're so yeah, there's a lot of levity and I need levity in my life every day. I watch, you know, my husband and I just watched a comedian the other day on Netflix and laughed together and joking and playing around and tickling and I like gardening and I have a lot of plants inside my house right now, and I can even hear the excitement rising in my voice, bringing me to life a little bit. So, yeah, thanks, Jordan. That's a great question. Pass.
Thank you, Jordan. That's a great question to end on. Thank you to all who posed questions this morning. Looks like that's the amount of time we have for today. Thank you so much. Again, the share ID for today, 22072, that's 22072. Thank you so much, Allison, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us. Thank you for your honesty and vulnerability as you described how you lay these principles down on the numerous facets of your life. Thank you so much. We will offer Alice's contact information at the conclusion of this recording. Let's now close from page 164. It's found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep